You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kesterman, and this is our latest look at the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm joined by Steve Gilbert. And, Steve, the Arizona rotation's been getting mostly positive reviews out there in the Cactus League, but one source of concern that sprung up this week was Zach Greinke's velocity, down a couple ticks. I know it's a topic that he addressed with you guys after his latest start, but, you know, for a guy whose season ended with a shoulder injury, to be down a little bit in velocity, especially at this stage in his career and the innings he's compiled, it's got to be a little bit of a source of concern for this club.
Yeah, Anthony, it's always hard, you know, to judge during spring training. You know, every pitcher at some point goes through that little bit of a dead arm period or a period where it seems like their velocity is down a little bit. This is a little early in camp for that, but again, you know, they brought Zach along pretty slow this spring just because of the WBC and having a longer spring training. So he didn't seem overly concerned about it yesterday. Obviously, he said he would have liked it to have been better. I think he topped out at about 89.5 miles an hour yesterday, and it's something that he is confident will come back before the end of spring training. So I think before you get too worried about it, let's see what happens over his next couple outings. He did feel like some of his off-speed stuff was pretty good yesterday and took a step forward from his first start of the spring. So obviously anything that has to do with Zach Greinke, though, gets him a lot of attention in that clubhouse because they're counting on him to kind of bounce back. And of course, maybe not be the guy he was in 2015 with a 1.66 ERA. That was pretty otherworldly. But to be an ace of the rotation, the top of the rotation kind of guy that they thought they were getting when they signed him 2 winters ago.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on him beyond spring training. You know, fascinating bounce back candidate, and Shelby Miller is of course another one. He had really, you know, two really strong outings to start the spring, then roughed up in his last one. But just what is the overall outlook for Shelby Miller here, based on what you've seen in these few starts?
You know, I think he came into camp certainly looking to redeem himself from last year. And I think one of the things that happened last year, certainly, and it's always hard to know how to, you know, kind of quantify this, but they gave up a lot, and some would say maybe rightly so, too much to acquire him from the Braves. And so there was a lot of pressure coming into spring training on him and didn't have a great spring and then had a bad first outing to the season. And that just, it seemed to just snowball on him. And this spring he came in, it seemed like he had a different kind of bounce in his step and a little bit more confidence. Threw the ball really well the first two times out. Last outing, again, the numbers were not good. I think what happened with him is he wasn't getting a couple of close pitches, and he let that bother him. And I think that's a good reminder for him as you get, you know, close to the regular season that you're not going to get some of those calls and how you're able to kind of put that behind you and move on. He wasn't quite able to do that in his last start, and they made him pay. But he still seemed, after the start, he seemed far more positive than we'd seen him last year after he had some rough outings. Again, I don't know if we're reading too much into that or not, but he does seem like a more confident guy this spring and a guy that feels a lot more comfortable than he did last year.
Another more recent trade acquisition, Taijuan Walker. I've heard some good things about his new delivery. He's a guy who's changed it several times in his young career, but it seems like some mechanical changes there are sticking, and he's having good results.
Yeah, he felt like he was just, you know, he had such a simple delivery before, which is great, except it didn't provide a lot of deception, and he felt it was too easy for hitters to kind of get a look at his release point and to see the ball all the way through. So he added more of a full windup. And he feels like they're a lot more comfortable there, and he feels like the hitters aren't getting as good a look at him. And whatever the cause, he's had a couple of really good starts for them. He's going to pitch again tomorrow, so he's somebody that they're really excited about. Obviously, a guy who has a lot of talent, has been around the top prospect list, it seems like, for years now. And they're just hopeful that this is the year that he kind of has a breakout year and kind of puts it all together.
It seems like I saw where he said the slider is an important pitch for him this year.
Yeah, and also health is important for him. He had all those bone spurs in his foot, which is kind of amazing that he was able to pitch through all those. You know, he had like 10 different bone spurs in his foot that they took out this winter. So, towards the end of last season. So that was a big thing for him too, is that he's able now. He feels like to pitch pain free. which is big. And also, as you mentioned, adding at that slider is going to be, or improving that slider is going to be a big thing for him during the season.
Two other young guys in this group, Archie Bradley, Robbie Ray. You know, these are very early impressions, but what are your early impressions of them in camp?
You know, Robbie Ray's first, the biggest thing for Robbie Ray, had a lot of strikeouts last year, is his pitch efficiency, because he struggled at times to put hitters away, and they worked deep counts on him last year, and all of a sudden you'd look up and maybe there'd be one run in or two runs in, and it'd be the fifth inning and he'd already be at 100 pitches and just not able to go deep in the game. So a big focus for him is coming up with a consistent third pitch. Fastball slider, fine, but trying to work on that changeup that he has. So he tweaked his grip a little bit on it, and in his second outing here of the spring, he pitched far better. His pitch efficiency was much better. He got a couple of double play ground balls when he needed them. And so I think he's starting to kind of get the feel for what he needs to do to keep that pitch count manageable so that he can pitch deeper into games. He was effective last year at times, but it just was he was not able to go deep, and you need a guy to go more than four or five innings each and every start. You mentioned Archie Bradley, too, and I'm sorry about that. Archie's had a few rough outings. He's working again on a third pitch. For him, he's bringing back a cutter that he had some success with during the fall league in 2014. And he's also still, you know, it's always been a work in progress for him as a changeup, because he's always had the fastball and the curveball. And so now he's focused on throwing a third pitch, whether it's the cutter, whether it's the changeup. And for him, he says he's not so much focused on results as he is on throwing those pitches and making sure he throws those pitches. So he's putting less stock in results and more stock in kind of what he's working on. Now, how that plays out, because he's kind of battling for a rotation spot, and how the coaching staff views that, I guess we'll learn as we get closer to the end of camp and some decisions have to be made.
Yeah, I was going to let you off the hook for only answering half of my questions, Steve. But you're a stand-up guy. You didn't leave me hanging. I appreciate that. In the bullpen, not in the rotation, but in the bullpen, you wrote a bit about Jared Miller. He's kind of become an intriguing option for these guys. You wrote about how his cutter has allowed him to raise his stock in the system.
Yeah, one of those things, a lefty, big, tall lefty out of Vanderbilt, and was playing catch with David Price before the start of the 2016 spring training. And he had told David that he noticed he was throwing a tighter slider or a cutter now these days, and David was kind of showing him the grip. And they just started playing catch, and it's always so funny because pitchers put so much time and effort into things, and sometimes it's just the littlest things or a suggestion here or there that changes everything for him. And whatever David suggested, all of a sudden he found that worked for him, and he suddenly had another pitch, the cutter. And it just so happened when he reported for spring training a week or two later that the Diamondbacks said, hey, we're thinking about moving you to the bullpen. And all of a sudden now he's that cutter became a fastball cutter guy. And he went from A-ball all the way up to AAA last season, and then rolled right into the fall league and had some good success there, which earned him an invite to camp this spring. And his first three outings of the spring, he was outstanding. Last one was a little bit of a hiccup, didn't do quite so well, but he's somebody that's definitely on their radar, if not to make the team out of spring training, certainly at some point during the season, in large part because of that cutter. And in fact, he's left-handed and can throw some multiple innings out of the bullpen and can be effective against both lefties and righties.
All right, there you have it, the latest word from Steve Gilbert. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Arizona D-backs edition. Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovance, and this is our latest look at the San Francisco Giants. I'm joined by Chris Haft and Haftman. First of all, were you able to avoid the champagne spray in the clubhouse after that big losing streak ending victory over the Indians on Monday?
Well, I got to admit, you know, they used Dom Perignon, and so, you know, I had to sample that. But
absolutely.
Yeah. Other than that, I was a good boy.
Yeah. Well, much more serious note and scary note for base coach Jose Aguacil, broken nose, deep cut, and small fractures in his eye socket after getting hit by a foul tip. And I was just talking to people about that whole setup, Chris, about, you know, it's one of those fun quirks of spring training, you know, coaches out on the chairs, you know, outside the dugout just because of the sheer mass of people in the dugout this time of year. But that... And when you talk to managers or coaches about it, that's what they say. Like, it is a little nerve-wracking because you are so close to the action. And, boy, that was the we saw that in real time, just the worst of that.
Yeah, you know, lately now, at least the Giants coaches have not been and Bruce Bochy have not been sitting out by the backstop since the unfortunate occurrence happened on this past Saturday with Jose. And I don't think it's gonna happen much in the future. Moreover, I'm just holding my breath, waiting for one of the higher ups in Major League Baseball to speak out or say something or do something about this. It is a custom, but maybe it's one that needs to be rethought.
Yeah, potentially, because it's unusual. You think just the grief alone from sitting so close to the fans in the first row, if you're hearing it from them during the game. But yeah, a major injury like this does cause everybody to pause and kind of rethink the way we've been doing things. And it's different. It's a different setup in different parks. Some coaches are better protected than others. But yeah, it's one of those unique traits to spring training that you just don't see in the regular season. And that is the obvious downside. But what's the latest on Jose and how he's doing?
He's doing fine. Apparently, we thought he was going to get out of the hospital yesterday and might show up here today. But apparently, if he does, it'll be later. I mean, I'm sure he needs plenty of rest. And so I would think we'd see him here in the next couple of days, but he might not get up back on the field for a couple of weeks.
Well, we certainly wish the best for him. And for Johnny Cueto's father, Cueto reported 3 weeks late because he was tending to his ailing father. And I mean, let's be honest, Chris, I mean, the Giants were probably relieved that his tardiness forced him out of the World Baseball Classic. We know that it's always an uncomfortable thing to have a prominent player, go off to that tournament. But is there any concern that he'll be behind schedule at the start of the season? I know he makes his Cactus League debut on Saturday.
Not much concern. At least if there is, they're hiding it well. I think they know what they saw what Johnny did last year. They know he's a hard worker, and he is a hard worker between starts and between bullpens. And so there's also the carrot on the end of the stick in the form of his opt-out clause in his contract, which he can exercise at the end of this season. So I mean, he insists he's not thinking about that right now. I'm sure he isn't. But I'm sure he's also thinking about maybe putting himself on a platform, so to speak, with a really strong year. So he's got lots of reasons to try to do well, and I think he will.
Yeah, it's always a moving target evaluating these massive contracts, and it can change from one year to the next. But you just think back over the last few years of the bigger deals for pitchers, and so far, I mean, it's only one season, but that 6-year 130 for Cueto that got a lot of questions attached to it at the time, just because of the erratic year he was coming off of. But he was obviously phenomenal for them last season, and now you're in a position where he could pitch himself right out of that contract with another strong 2017.
Exactly. I mean, they've already got one player who's outperformed his contract in Madison Bumgarner, and I guess maybe it'll be a double migraine headache for these guys if Johnny pitches well. But maybe if he pitches well, that might reflect that they went far into the postseason, the Giants. Yeah. So we'll, who knows. It may just be a welcome byproduct.
And of course, we're just a couple of weeks into the Cactus League, too early to make any grand determinations. But what are the early thoughts on Jimmy Rollins as a utility player? He's of course played all but a third of an inning in his big league career at shortstop. So how's he looking at the other spot?
We haven't seen him at third base yet. He's not going to play left field. He has played second base, and he has handled himself extremely well at second base. He looks like a natural there. I don't think defense is going to be a problem for Jimmy Rollins. As Matt Cain said yesterday, Jimmy Rollins is an athlete, and wherever you put him, he's going to be able to make plays. I think the question with him is going to be at the plate. If he's on the bench, they're going to need him to come up, against a tough reliever, that sort of thing, in the late innings, and work a good at bat, get a pinch hit. Can he do that sort of thing? I think in the long run, it may be the offense that might be the measuring stick with him.
And we know the Giants have said they're sticking with Eduardo Nunez as their regular at third base, as opposed to utility role that he's held for much of his big league career.
But he dealt with that shoulder soreness here early on in camp, and there's been some nice offensive performances, you know, from the third base spot in his absence. But what are your thoughts on Nunez as he grinds through that injury and gets ready for the year?
Grinds through that injury, that's a pretty apt phrase. that's just it. You know, they want him to be the starting third baseman, but of course they'll have to get healthy. And if he doesn't, as you referred to, Anthony, they've got a lot of they have some other alternatives. Connor Gillespie has swung a hot bat, although his throwing arm's sore, so he's been set back for the last 2-3 days. Jae Young Wang from Korea, I probably botched that pronunciation in some way or form. He's got a lively bat, and I'm not saying he's going to be the opening day third baseman. In fact, he may start the year in AAA. I'm going to assume that because he really wants to play here, I'm going to assume that he'll want, you know, if they don't have room, they have to send him to AAA, that he'll accept the assignment and, eventually somehow work his way into the majors. So, again, it'll probably go, all things considered equal, things will probably go as planned at third base, but if they don't, they've got some alternatives.
And how about the left field? I'm not going to peg you to any answer here as far as who will be the opening day left fielder, but what are your thoughts on how that battle is shaking out so far?
For a while there, it looked like Jared Parker was going to maybe run away with things, so to speak, but he's fallen into a little bit of a tailspin recently, and Mac Williamson hit an opposite field home run, which is the kind of thing managers love to see, even in Arizona where, you know, the ball travels better. And Mac Williams is a heck of an athlete, speaking of good athletes. And, if Parker does win the job, it's not going to go – he won't win without a fight from Mac Williamson. So that's that will probably come down to the final week.
And then the most important question on the roster, Chris, what do you think of Hunter Pence's new clean-cut look? New old look, I should say. I mean, that's his
old
look.
New
old
look, yeah. It's gonna be not high maintenance, but it's gonna require him to shave every day and keep the hair shorn and all that. So it's it may be more trouble than it's worth. I think it looks fine. I think it looks great. Anything that makes a player look younger, I think the player himself welcomes. So, and Hunter does look younger. He looks like he's back playing right field for the Astros again.
Very good. You get more established, to put it nicely, in your big league career. You get a little advanced in age, and anything that helps take off those years can help. So it's a good look for him. But we'll look for more from the clean-cut Chris Haft as spring training continues out there in Scottsdale, Arizona. We thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. An MLB.com Extra, San Francisco Giants edition. Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the San Diego Padres. I'm joined by A.J. Cassavell. And, A.J., some earlier impressions of Jared Weaver from his first start in a Padres uni. I know he's talked about improved flexibility, helping him on the mound, but this is obviously an important veteran presence for a very young rotation.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest reasons they signed him. He's kind of already assuming that leadership mantle in the clubhouse. His big thing early in camp has been about his flexibility. After his first start, he said he feels 10 steps ahead of where he was last year. Now, that's obviously one of those spring training cliches that you'll hear from guys, but in his case, he really kind of changed his between starts workout routine, focusing more on his flexibility, and as a result, he struggled with some neck and some hip and some kind of shoulder stiffness last season. He doesn't, and toward the end of the year, once he added that flexibility stuff in between starts, he didn't feel it as much, and the results improved, and so far in camp, that's kind of what the focus has been for him.
And Trevor Cahill is another interesting name on that pitching staff, a guy who's bounced around a bit his career and done the starting thing, done the relieving thing. You know, he had a good showing so far, his first five innings of work. It's only five innings, but hey, any positive first impression is a good first impression. Five strikeouts in those five innings. What are the thoughts on how he fits into the picture here?
Yeah, he's an interesting case because he's been a very effective reliever for a couple years now, but he signed with the Padres for the chance to start, and so far he hasn't done anything to hurt his case. He's been probably their best he's looked like their best pitcher so far in camp. Five innings, I believe, one hit. His breaking ball has been in his first start. His first three strikeouts came in the first two innings. They were all looking, and they were all kind of curveballs that backdoor curveballs that kind of baffled the opposing hitters. So there's not much to take out of spring training results, but if you can tell something, I think there is something to be said about the way hitters react to the pitches. And right now it looks like Hale's not the easiest guy to hit. In terms of the Padres rotation, at this point I would say he's probably a favorite for one of those last two spots. Right now, Weaver, Chacin, and Clayton Richard seem to have the first three spots, but if anyone has the odds-on chances of making it into the back end of the rotation, I would say it's Cahill.
And more from the early returns front, early impressions, probably way too early returns and impressions, especially in this case, but Christian Bethencourt is obviously a source of fascination in our game right now, trying to make the transition to pitching, and I've seen a little bit of the video, AJ, and you know, mechanically he looks pretty sound. He looks like he knows what he's doing, which is a good compliment at this stage of the experiment. But I'm sure for him, you know, repeating the delivery is probably an early hang up or just an early issue that needs to be ironed out for somebody who's just so raw. But what have you thought of this experiment and the realistic potential of Bethencourt as a pitcher?
Yeah, he's if you go back and watch the video from his two kind of mop-up position player pitching outings last year, it's night and day, his mechanics. He's smooth, he's free. There's things to work on. You said repeating his delivery. I think repeating his delivery is probably the biggest thing in his most recent outing. He started keeping the ball up in the zone a little too much. He said it was because his front shoulder was flying open. I imagine for someone who hasn't spent consistent time as a pitcher ever until about 2 months ago, that's not an easy thing to do. So he's still learning to harness it. The benefits are easy to see because the Padres roster right now is pretty crowded. They have three Rule 5 picks. They'd like to find space for Rule 5 catcher Luis Torin. He is not necessarily the guy they're going to he's not necessarily a guy they would consider as the lone backup catcher to Austin Hedges. So if Bethencourt can serve as this kind of reliever catcher hybrid and even play some outfield, he would clear space for Torrens on the roster. Their middle infield right now in San Diego is a little clogged up. So the roster flexibility Bethencourt brings would be huge. He has a long way to go, but it's encouraging that in his first appearance against legitimate major league hitters against the Diamondbacks the other day, he didn't back down. His mechanics, I guess he said he started flying open with his front side a little bit, but he managed to bear down and get out of the inning without allowing a hit. So two appearances into his Cactus League season, he's allowed no hits and one walk. I'd say that's as good a start as you could imagine for a guy who hasn't spent much time pitching.
Well, we like the strange in baseball. We like the weird stuff and, you know, Pat Venditti pitching from each side, that kind of thing. But so I know you've asked Andy Green this, but would we ever see Bethencourt pitch to one batter and then get behind the plate for the next, or vice versa? That would be the ultimate right there.
Yeah, well, I asked Andy Green about that last week. Kind of he could be presented with some really novel managerial decisions that no manager has faced before. Because you think of things like him possibly double switching with Bethencourt to get his bat into the pitcher spot. So you double switch toward the pitcher spot as opposed to the opposite. Andy Green said no, probably not. He doesn't foresee that situation. But there is a way. If you think about like maybe the strategy of the game, there is a way it's conceivable where Bethencourt pitches and then his spots do up, so you want to keep him in the game, and maybe Austin Hedges has already batted, so you want to keep him in the game, and so you move him to behind the plate. It's not too far-fetched an idea the way baseball strategy might shake out. It would have to kind of be the perfect scenario where Bethencourt's the guy you want as the pinch hitter or as your best bat off the bench, do up the next inning, and maybe Austin Hedges has already hit, but it's not out of the realm of possibility in terms of baseball strategy. Andy Green kind of said he didn't see it as likely, but if everything falls the right way, it wouldn't be shocking. It would certainly be fun to see, though.
Yeah, and kind of along those experimental lines, I wrote a piece on Sports on Earth this week just about rethinking rotations. Will we see a 6-man rotation for any legitimate stretch at the big league level? Will we see a 4-man rotation? And of course, the Padres enter the possibility of the more of a tandem model. And I know they've kind of played around with that, just in conversation, that idea of starting a game with a reliever and then going to the starter. But where are they at with that conversation? Is it something we might legitimately see this season?
I think we could definitely see something like that, because the Padres have, I think they could end up taking about seven starting pitchers on their opening day roster, with two of them serving as de facto bullpen guys. It's not something you're necessarily going to see every single day, but if you have a kind of a, Andy Green mentioned two guys, Paul Clemens and Christian Friedrich. Friedrich's a lefty, Clemens is a righty. They're kind of different in what they bring to the table. Clemens kind of has a big curveball. Friedrich's stuff doesn't break necessarily as much, and obviously they come from different sides of the rubber. So if you do something like that, then if say Paul Clemens starts the game, you get a left-handed loading lineup against a team like the Dodgers that likes to platoon. Well, or any other team in baseball these days, because pretty much everyone's platooning to get the best advantages. Well, if Clemens pitches a few innings and Friedrich is available for the second time through the order, all of a sudden you have every matchup advantage and you kind of force the opposing manager's hand. So I think that's what the Padres are thinking right now. They're not going to do it every time through the rotation. I think with a young pitcher like a Luis Perdomo, they're not necessarily going to do that because they want to give him the chance to work deeper into games. But there's definitely benefits to it, and the Padres have definitely explored those benefits, and I would not be the least bit surprised if we saw something like that this season.
Yeah, that would be fascinating, because it's one of those things that always looks so good on paper. A couple teams have kind of played around with the tandem model, you know, variations of what you're talking about, and it hasn't lasted for a sustained stretch. But you know, if there's ever a team to experiment with it, it's a team that, let's face it, is not in a earnest, you know, contention model currently. And maybe has more of an iffy rotation picture, which this is, you know, a young and developing rotation by and large. So it would be fascinating to see that in real time and see how that experiment works. I wanted to ask you one more thing, AJ, and this actually came from a reader on Twitter had asked me, who's going to have the best offensive season for the Padres in 2017 among Manuel Margot, Hunter Renfroe, or Austin Hedges? Now, I went with Margot, and of course I jinxed him because like 2 days later he wrenched his knee. But so first give me the update on him and then give me your answer to this pressing question.
Yeah, that's a good question. The update on Margot, it sounds like it's just a swollen knee more than anything else. There's no structural damage or anything, so he should be back in action some point later this week. It's a tough question. I would say the best offensive player among those three makes it somewhat extra difficult. Austin Hedges is going to have the best all-around season, I would say, because of what he brings to the table defensively and calling games. But if it's strictly offensively, I think I'd agree with you with Margot. He brings so much to the table. He sprays line drives all over the field. He steals bases. Hunter Renfroe it wouldn't be a bad pick either, just because of the power he brings to the table. But I sincerely think he might have the biggest learning curve. I still think his potential is off the charts, but he might have the biggest learning curve of the three, just because he struggled with hitting big league caliber breaking pitches, and he's going to maybe need to harness his plate discipline a little bit. So those are things that I think take time, whereas Manny Margot has the offensive game that could more directly translate to the major league level. So I'd take Margot. I think Hedges is going to hit probably better than he has in the past, because he never really got consistent playing time and his numbers aren't great. But of the three, I would expect Margot to have the biggest season. I wouldn't be surprised if Margot spent a little bit of time at AAA, but he'll be at the major league level soon enough and ready to contribute.
Yeah, certainly a guy who can impact with his bat and his legs. So good stuff as always from AJ. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, San Diego Padres edition. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Colorado Rockies. I am joined by the 6'9" Thomas Harding. And Thomas, the Rockies got some a little bit of an early spring bummer here with David Dahl's injury, a stress reaction in his sixth rib. He'll be activity free for at least the next couple weeks. And this was a guy who's very easy to be excited about coming off his offensive performance in about 200 at bats last season. But give me your thoughts on Dahl and his recovery from this one.
Well, first of all, they've got to be very careful with David Dahl. And I think they are, and I talked to David yesterday. There's no talk about pushing him so he can be there for opening day, which really is a meaningless deadline. I mean, it's 162nd of your season. So if they can get him right, then he's a good bat to have in that lineup. He was competing for the left field job with Gerardo Parra, a guy they signed before last season for 3 years and $27.5 million. And Parra was hurt all of last year, really, and didn't – exactly hit with any consistency when he was healthy, but he's healthy now, so they're able to absorb this injury to David Dahl.
Yeah, obviously Parra, you know, would stand to benefit from the increased playing time, but I want to talk to Dr. Harding here. What is the stress reaction versus the stress fracture?
Okay, it's actually... And I think I mentioned this yesterday. This came from Princeton University. So, you know, it's not just something that I kind of thought of while sitting in the press box. But it's basically the degree of disruption to the bone there. It's sort of like, you know, what is a sprain versus a tear? If you don't treat it right, then it could become a stress fracture. Right now, just the bone makeup is a bit disrupted there. I mean, it looks like it could go. So they're trying to stop it before it does go.
Gotcha. That's you know, I expected nothing but the utmost medical due diligence from our resident would-be doctor. Instead, you're a sports writer, but that's okay.
Sometimes you got to be Grey's Anatomy here.
Absolutely. Greg Holland was a interesting sign by this club, of course. 1 year, $7 million deal with a vesting option for 18. It just seemed like the industry did not know what to make of Greg Holland this winter. He had a showcase, I believe it was in November, and underwhelming, I think, was the word to describe that just from a velocity standpoint. You know, he was sitting in the mid to upper 80s, a guy who used to have a fiery fastball before the injury and the Tommy John. But it sounds like the velocity is creeping back up there in Rockies camp.
Yes, it is. But if you go back and you look at it, that showcase was 13 months out of surgery. Usually when you're 13 months out of Tommy John surgery, you are pitching your first rehab game. So that I didn't understand. Why was the industry expecting him to be at 95 miles an hour at that point? So I didn't think that that was a huge thing to be alarmed about. Now, when a guy's coming off of Tommy John surgery, there are reasons to be alarmed. I just didn't think that the showcase really had any effect on it. If you look at him right now, he's up around 91, 92, and that was in a simulated game with three or four minor league guys he's probably never met. And who knows, maybe he'll meet them at some point. I know they hope to meet him, but you're on a backfield, no fans there, 91, 92. You'll get him into some spring training games. Now, possibly he may throw some minor league games just to build the pitch count up. But at some point, you want him to be totally healthy and understand his motion. That's the thing. But that's the thing about him. He wants to be repeating his delivery, having the ball coming out right before he gets out there with the adrenaline and the fans and something that really matters, where that's going to put a few more miles an hour on your fastball. But you don't want to be unsound when you get out there. That's what he's trying to do. He's just trying to build up and make sure, build up his motion, build up the ability to repeat, build up his endurance, and make sure that he's doing things right when the adrenaline takes over.
Yeah, that's laudable. That's what I'm doing with this podcast. I'm trying to ease into it here. I'm going to hit you with the big picture questions at the end. I'm going to gear you up towards that point. But first, Thomas, I want to know about Chris DeNorfia. Kind of an interesting non-roster candidate, having not played last season because of back surgery. What does he bring to the table at this stage of his career?
Well, that was the big question, and why he really had to hustle to get this contract. He did finish the last season with the Giants at the AAA level, but they didn't call him up for the stretch run. So he got an early start on his postseason, did a lot of gymnastics work. I mean, I urge you to go look at my story on the site, and it links to an earlier story that has some of the Instagrams of him doing all this gymnastics stuff. If he is healthy, then he adds a few things to the Rockies. When he played for Bud Black with the Padres, he played all three outfield positions, was a starter for long stretches of time. Not only that, but he's a fast runner, an aggressive runner. And the Rockies right now, it's kind of iffy. Are they going to steal bases? I'm not sure. Are they going to be aggressive with the ball in play? They need to be, but it certainly is good to have a guy like Chris DeNorfia. And not only that, but he's a right-handed bat on a team that everybody on their major league roster hits left-handed. So he could be a pretty interesting guy to add to a team. And it depends. At the end of spring training, say if Dahl does come back and he doesn't have a spot here, would he go to AAA to be there in case something happened? Because things always happen.
All right. So just a couple of bigger picture questions for you here, Thomas. I mean, this is not really big picture. This is about one guy, but I think he represents so much in the big picture, and that's John Gray. I've been hearing great things about just how he looks physically. You know, as a 25-year-old guy who, you know, trying to find himself at the big league level from a consistency standpoint last season, do you think he's going to make the leap? And I ask that with the leap capitalized. The T and the L are both capitalized. Is this the year for the leap for John Gray?
I'll tell you what. John Gray reminds me at this stage of his career of Ubaldo Jimenez when he ended up making the leap with the Rockies. Now, it took him about, from this point of his career, it took him about a year and a half, actually most of the season, and then the following year he really made the leap. But the way Gray pitched at the end of last season, the power that he pitched with, and the confidence that he pitched with, it's possible he can make the leap now, the leap you're talking about. The thing where he goes out on the mound, he knows that he dominates this game, and so does the other team. That's what the Rockies have been looking for Gray, and actually they've been coaching him for that. When I talked to the general manager, Jeff Breidich, and also the pitching coach, Steve Foster, at the end of the season, I'm like, okay, what does he need to work on? And they're like, we're not going to talk to you about his curveball or whether or his release point or his launch angle or anything like that. What we're going to talk to you about is, does he believe that he can dominate a baseball game? Does he believe that he is one of the best pitchers in the major leagues? And that's what they've been trying to pump into him mentally here, and he's taking to that. So, obviously, we can talk about it all day, and if that worked, then Dr. Phil could be a pitching coach. You know, just convince a guy, this is a changing day in your life. But can he go out there and do it? And that's what we're looking for. I mean, this is a guy who throws when he wants to in the upper 90s, who has a nice curveball that works as a change of pace. He also has a devastating slider. He gets a lot of strikeouts on. So all the tools in the pitch mix, they're all there. It's just, can John Gray put it together, and can he show up and say he doesn't have all of his stuff? Can he get by on that? How often will he have all of his pitches? You're talking about a guy that the Rockies expect to be mentioned with the top pitchers for the next years to come.
Yeah, absolutely. That's they got a lot of faith in this young rotation in general, and that's why they invested so heavily this offseason to improve this product for 2017. And that leads to, the big picture question, Thomas. And another thing we're hearing is just about the optimism in this camp with Bud Black coming aboard as manager and changing the tone there, and obviously the moves they made this winter with Ian Desmond and improving the bullpen. Give me the sense of this club. It's way too early to measure their performance, but we're hearing good things from evaluators about them. What is your outlook on the Rockies going into 2017?
I believe that they've got a chance this year, and they've got to make the right moves as the year goes on, or they've got to really know their personnel. I will give Jeff Breidich a lot of points for that. It seems that a lot of the guys that he's traded for right before they've and the people in the system, he has a good handle on what they can do and what they can grow into. But the next question will be, when they get close to that deadline, because they're in a division with the Dodgers and the Giants, can they do little things to push them over the top? Would it be a big trade, say, for a catcher, because there's not a lot of experience there? Could they improve the bullpen or even go out and get that starting pitcher to push them over the top? Or could this team be like the 2007 team where in August, they lost three of their five starting pitchers to injury, and none of them came back except for Aaron Cook, who came back for Game 4 of the World Series. Mostly that was done from within. The guys like Ubaldo Jimenez and Franklin Morales, they came up and pitched. Will the Rockies have enough depth to withstand injuries and depend on those guys rather than going out and getting somebody if they're in a pennant race? Jeff Breidich has to make all those moves. He has to make them correctly. This is a sport where the general manager is an impact player. Can Jeff Breidich be that impact player here?
All right. There you have it. The latest from Thomas Harding. I want to thank him for joining us. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Colorado Rockies edition. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and this is our latest look at the Los Angeles Dodgers. I'm joined by Ken Gernick. Ken, this stage of camp, Dodgers dealing with a lot of bumps and bruises right now. I don't know how serious any of these are in isolation, but you know, the cumulative effect certainly catches your eye. And I thought we'd delve into a few of these, but Corey Seager, first and foremost, been out about a week now with some back troubles. What's the latest on him?
Yeah, that's the one that's sort of annoying when you're thinking about it from Dodger fan standpoint. You know, they kind of didn't make much of it in the beginning, but he's been out a week now. So it seems to be lingering. They still insist it's not serious. It's kind of the middle back, and it happened when he made an awkward throw. But I think part of the concern is that even when he comes back later, you know, they've got a new second baseman, Logan Forsythe, so you want the double play combination to work together, and they've played like two games. So, you know, assuming that it actually does go away and doesn't affect his swing or anything, it's more of an annoyance than anything right now.
And how about Justin Turner? We saw he missed a couple games after having a lubricating injection in his arthritic right knee. And, you know, we know he's expected back in the lineup later this week, but just because he's a guy who's, you know, been associated with knee issues before, had the, you know, microfracture surgery after 2015, I believe it was. I mean, do you think this is something that, you know, worth keeping an eye on?
Well, the only good news about it is that he had these injections last year at this time, early spring training, and he went on to have his best season ever. So
yeah.
They say that it's preventative, and they kind of compare it to just, you know, changing the lubrication and oil in your car. And so you kind of have to believe that, especially after the way he responded last year. So, you know, as long as it's only a couple days and it doesn't linger, it's just sort of kind of the new breed of maintenance.
Scott Kazmir, he's got an extensive injury history to his name. And last year he had the hip issues that led to neck inflammation that forced him to the DL. So not great to hear him dealing with hip issues again this spring, but an MRI showed no signs of serious injury there. What's the latest on his progression?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of good news and bad news. Like if there was, you know, if the MRI really showed what the problem was, then you could pinpoint it. So the problem now is it still remains to be determined, you know, whether it's mechanical, physical, mental, who knows. But he really hasn't pitched well in spring. And this kind of goes back to almost the middle of last year. So there is concern about how long it's going to take him to get his act together. And he threw a bullpen session yesterday and was okay. But manager Dave Roberts said he won't be back in a game until he shows that he can command it on a backfield in a minor league game. So he's got some work to do, and they have no shortage of starting pitchers. So it's going to get interesting if he doesn't get it together quickly about what they're going to do with him. He's got 2 years left on his contract.
Getting away from the injury conversation, but kind of sticking with the rotation, Rich Hill's spring has been not good. 12.60 ERA in three starts. We know the results don't matter, Ken, but it sounds like they matter to Rich Hill. He sounds like he's pretty frustrated with himself so far.
Yeah, he sure was yesterday. You know, getting back to kind of like a Turner situation, Rich Hill had a bad spring training last year too, and he like Justin Turner parlayed that into a good year and a breakout season and a big contract. So you know, I guess to that extent you almost hope that that things repeat. So you know, you can even say the same thing about Corey Seager. He had a bad knee last spring, and all he did was finish third in MVP and was the unanimous rookie of the year. So you know, if you want to kind of twist it around, you say all these guys have the same kind of spring they had last year, and it somehow equated to a good year once the bell rang.
Yeah, we never know what we're looking at this time of year. That's the fun and the frustration of spring training, I guess. But on the total other side of the spectrum, Ken, Clayton Kershaw has looked like a man on a mission so far. No hits allowed in his six innings of work, and, you know, really good signs there, just considering, obviously, he had the back issues last year, and you wonder, are there going to be any lingering effects from that? But so far, so good.
Yeah, he's looked like Clayton Kershaw. And you know, on the day off today, nobody's supposed to go to the ballpark except Clayton Kershaw, because he's scheduled to throw his bullpen session, and he's Clayton Kershaw, and that's what he does on days off. He works. So, yeah, they should only have 25 or 30 guys like that. And he doesn't show any signs of the back injury that he had last year. He's changed his whole workout routine to make sure of that, and it looks like, at least to this extent, he's gotten over that.
Another Dodgers news this week. We heard the news about Yasiel Puig's home was burglarized back in L.A., but I thought we'd talk for a minute about, you know, Puig on the field. You saw that giant bat flip. I don't know if the bat flip has landed yet after his first home run of the spring. But just in general, Ken, after another, you know, roller coaster year, had the demotion to AAA last year, what are the Dodgers saying about, you know, what they're seeing from Puig at the plate this spring?
It's been pretty good. He doesn't look like he did in his rookie year, you know, and that was really the hope. But they kind of re-engineered his swing and tried to get him to be a little more athletic and looser like he was in his early year. But his body has changed since then, and his swing has changed. You know, I guess that they're really would be ideal if he could somehow recapture that that impact swing that he had. I think that they would be satisfied if he just becomes kind of a platoon outfielder. Of course, you're always hoping for more than that, but they want at least that. And so far he's been that, and he's played well in the outfield, and he's been real good in the clubhouse. So, and that counts a lot when you're talking about Puig. So overall, there haven't been any complaints, and they're hoping that the swing will come along slowly. It obviously has taken him time and included a AAA demotion last year, but he's got the right attitude and he's trying the right approach, and they haven't given up on him for sure. So they're hoping, you know, against all hope, that it just you know, gradually comes back to approach what he was as a rookie.
I mentioned Puig's eye-catching bat flip, and a guy who had an eye-catching home run, you know, very early in the games is Cody Bellinger. Had that ball that bounced out of Maryvale Stadium. Seems like a really good opportunity for him with Adrian Gonzalez in the World Baseball Classic right now.
Yeah, he has had a lot of playing time. You know, he probably could be well served by going to AAA, at least for a half a season. And the Dodgers have plenty of outfielders. He's as natural in the outfield as he is at first base, which is unusual. So the team is comfortable using him wherever they have an opening. But as long as Adrian Gonzalez gets over this elbow problem that slowed him down early in spring, and he's now at the WBC, and if he comes back healthy, he'll be their first baseman. You know, you can write down 90 RBIs or more for him every year. So, you know, that spot's not open yet for Bellinger, but an outfield spot could be open. Mm-hmm. And if he takes that swing to AAA and can make contact and hit for average, defensively he can get the job done. He could be a call-up definitely during the year.
Yeah, he'll definitely be a name to watch. I want to thank Ken Gernick for his insights as always. This has been MLB.com Extras, Los Angeles Dodgers edition.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.